Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Monday, June 21st, 2021. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez. We have Sam Mellinger with the Kansas City Star joining us. Sam, happy late Father's Day. Hope you had a good one yesterday.
You as well. Yeah, my day was swell. Hope yours was as well.
How'd your day start today?
Less good.
What happened?
So you ever like see something or experience something that is like just so out of place and outside of anything that you considered possible that you don't believe it?
Every day when I do this show, Sam.
Yeah. So I go downstairs, like start the coffee and stuff, and dog comes down, and I'm walking toward the back door to let her out, and I slipped, and I almost fell, like literally just on my back. And I'm like, my first thought was like, freaking kids, you know, like they're spilling water again. But the kids are asleep. So I look down and it's brown. And I was like, there's no way that that's, you know, and then I kind of like hopped on one foot because thankfully it was just one foot that got in. I hopped on my other foot, grabbed a paper towel, picked some of it up. And I was like, ugh, worst fear confirmed. So, just cleaned it up, went upstairs, got in the shower, washed my feet. I come here to talk to you guys.
Well, it can only go up from here. Exactly. From there, I think, right? I
mean, that's what I'm hoping.
It's a very poop-themed show, you know, so far today, by the way.
Yeah,
as soon as I walked in this door, my Monday turned up, so I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, I didn't even know about your situation when I started comparing.
It was weird listening to that in the car. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Right?
Yeah, it was. it really hit home. Was it? You know?
But I tried, like, you know, I tried sometimes when I think it sounds better in my head than it does when I actually say it, but I was trying to just. Because, look, well, we'll get right into it. We're going to talk about modesty. There is no good way to deliver that. That's going to deliver that news to the media and to the fans. That's going to make it sound good or make modesty sound good. Because you know what, the people that have dug in against him, just like the people that have dug in for him, they look for every ounce of evidence that they could find to support their argument. And as soon as you hear, well, you know, he felt something, he had to leave the game, we're still getting more information on that. You could hear the eyes rolling around Kansas City, right? See, I told you, there it is, there he is. Just like when he hits a 464-foot home run and does these spectacular things in the 2 weeks that he's actually played. See, this is why we call him a MVP candidate. See, that's what we're talking about. So there's he gives evidence to both sides, like almost on a regular basis, to where people dig in even more. And so I won't even attempt to ask a question about it or put words in your mouth, but I mean, just give us your reaction to this latest injury situation with Adalberto Mondesi.
Well, I think what you just described there is, I mean, this happens in and out of sports, but people arguing two different things that are both true. like the Royals cannot trust him. They can't. Like, we talked about this last week, and that was before he felt something, you know? That was before he got back and hit a 464-foot home run and all this other stuff. Like, but they can't trust him. And again, like, at that position, you need to be able to trust a guy. And, you know, we can go back to Escobar and, you know, things that we took for granted with him. He played the position. He was there every day. And you know, Mondesi is a breathtaking talent. I mean, the stuff he does in the field, even like a normal mundane play, like a play that Nicky Lopez will make easily, Mondesi just does it just a little bit better and a little bit smoother. And then he'll turn a double play that normal people can't turn. His hands are quick. You know, the way he turns double play, it's just everything he does is sort of next level with his talent. Now, look, the 10 games that he's played, he's hit the crap out of the ball. No pun intended. he's hit it well. And look, I think we all agree that if he plays 140 games in a season, he's going to have some slumps, you know, like he's that kind of hitter. He's going to have stretches like this where he mashes, and then he's going to have stretches where he looks a little lost, and a lot of that's plate discipline, and we can talk about all that stuff once he's healthy. but it's just there's at least two things that are extraordinarily frustrating about his health situation. The first is, again, like at shortstop, you just most teams don't carry two guys that can play shortstop. The Royals are a little bit better positioned than most. Lopez can get you by. Bobby Witt Jr. will be up at some point and by all accounts can play big league shortstop. So the Royals are a little bit better covered there than with most teams. But the other thing is this team has been built 4 years, you know, at least this offseason and the last year, I guess, with the idea of maximizing the number of games, the number of years that Perez, Witt, Bobby Witt Jr. And Mondesi can be on the field at the same time. Like the Royals see those three guys as difference makers, game changers, you know, sort of elite top shelf talent. And you get those guys on the field at the same time, bunch them in the order together and kind of surround them with what you can. Good supporting players like Hunter Dozier when he's going well, Benintendi, all that stuff. Those guys are kind of supporting players for your three stars. And, you know, just have this one guy here. And you don't know how long Salvador Perez is going to play like he's playing right now. You know, he's 31 years old. And you don't know, as excited as a lot of us are about Bobby Witt Jr., he's still in Double A, and that's a long way from the big leagues. And the one guy that, you know, is 25 years old and obviously has, you know, elite big league talent, even by big league standards, can't play more than seven games in a row. And, you know, they've built a chunk of their future around this guy, and it is incredibly frustrating. You heard that with Mike Matheny. I know you guys played that clip last hour, but I mean,
play it again.
He's tired of it.
Yeah, you could tell. I was going to say the same thing, Sam. I mean, like as we said, to go back to Steven's analogy about how you try to present the poop.
Yeah.
He's not trying to. He's just like, here it is. Here's.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean. And no, he felt a little something. We're still getting some more information on it. So we had to get him out of the game at that point. But we're going to continue to watch and see what the trainers say.
Was that the hamstring or was that something different?
I think it was more of the side.
I got poople.
And there's so much there. There's so much there to pick apart because you have Lynn Worthy. So was it the hamstring? Was it the there's like so many different things right. to pick from. So which injury was it? What are we talking about here? And then even like with Mike Matheny, because you could take what you want. Like Nate tried to be, you know, best case and more positive earlier, and said, well, you know, maybe they're just being careful with him. They gave him that scheduled day off on Saturday. And it's going to be, it really is precautionary. And they told him, hey, if you feel anything, let us know. We'll get you out of the game because we don't want you to aggravate anything even more. And so if you're being positive, you can take that away from it and look at it that way. But if you're more of a pessimist or even a realist, you think the reporter, there's so many different injuries. The reporter has to follow. Okay, now which one are we talking about here? Is it the hamstring? Is it the oblique? Or is it something different? And the manager, you hear him, and there's no way to present it that makes it sound good, and you could just tell the frustration in his voice. But again, Sam, it's one of these deals where, like, if you see someone roll an ankle, you don't question that. He rolled his ankle. Yes. And I'm not saying Mondesi's not hurt. But each one of these, because he's clearly hurt. But each one of these, when Mike Matheny's talked about it, it's somewhat mysterious. He didn't know when it happened. They don't quite know what's going on. They need to get some more information, and then we'll find out about it. All three of them have been that way, where the fan or just someone that's like, what the hell happened? Why did he leave the game? What's going on here?
Yeah.
And so that just adds to it. And so if you're a pessimist and you're anti-Mondesi or you just fed up with it, then you hear that and everything that you want is right there to back your argument. Listen, the manager sounds frustrated. He doesn't even know when it happened. And now they got to get more information. And the reporter had to figure out which injury they're talking about. It's a mess.
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of context here on a couple things. And it's not meant to make people feel better or worse. These are just facts. Like when he came back, that Saturday day off was planned. That was just sort of in the books. And I don't know if that was a day game after a night game thing, you know, playing it on Sunday or what, but that was sort of the plan to kind of ease him back. Another thing is, most guys would do a rehab stint. You know what I mean? They'd go to AAA, or if AAA was on some road trip far away, they'd go to AA and just, you know, 2, 3, 4 games or whatever. Mondesi's first at bat, he hits a home run into the fountain. Like, that just doesn't happen. Like, that's not normal. And I think that, you know, one, sure, it's an illustration of this extraordinary talent. Sort of, you know, again, next level stuff. Two, it's, I think he could have played the day before. You know what I mean? Like, I think he could have played a couple days before. You know, are you waiting too long? Another thing to keep in mind, Mike Matheny, we're still, and this is his second season, obviously, but I think some of us, and maybe I'm just projecting here for me, are used to Ned Yost. And Ned Yost had that classic coaching thing where after losses, a lot of times he's going to try and be more positive. And after wins, he's going to talk about things that didn't go well. It just sort of, that's a natural sort of a mechanism that people develop to, you know, even the things out. Bill Snyder was great at that. And Mike Matheny does not do that. Mike Matheny wears it. And after a loss, he can be an MF-er, you know, and he is angry that they lost, and he's thinking about things that he could have done or whatever. And so I think that's a little bit of it as well. And then the other factor here is that they don't know. Like, I mean, it's just these soft tissue injuries are hard to gauge. And there's a lot more, like you said, Steven, like a high ankle sprain or a fractured whatever, a UCL. You know, those are things that MRI, okay, this is what we're going to do no matter what you say. But hamstring, oblique, you know, these are kinds of, these are injuries where there's a lot more, you know, give and take. The player has a lot more say. How do you feel? And, you know, you can't help but wonder, you know, would, if Salvador Perez, that's a bad example. Salvador Perez is a mutant. But if, I'm just looking at, like, you know, if Michael A. Taylor, just to pick a random player, if Michael A. Taylor felt exactly the same as Mondesi yesterday, would he have said something? If he did, would he have been pulled? You know what I mean? Like, there's just a different history that builds up. And it's just, there's a million reasons that the team should be, and understandably so, frustrated with what's going on. And he's frustrated too. You know, we can say what we want, but he wants to play. But it's just, there is a long history of this man not being able to play. His one full season was 60 games. Right. You know, what is the number, 102, 104, something like that? He hadn't played more than that number of games since he was like 17 years old. So it's just, they got to figure something out. I don't think that this is sustainable going forward. And again, that doesn't mean they're going to DFA him or trade him for baseballs or whatever. But I don't think that planning on him being this cornerstone, one of three guys that you're building around at shortstop without a little bit more of a safety net. I don't know how much longer they can go about it like that.
So what's their tipping point? And if they can't go any longer, then what's the solution? What will they do?
Well, I mean, I'm still wondering about a position switch. I think that is something that the team has probably at least talked about. I'm not saying they've talked about it seriously or anything like that, but I think that these are just sort of conversations that you have. And, you know, it's
where would you switch him?
Second base or the outfield. But, you know, the problem is if you, he plays in center field, like all that talent, the speed, the arm, the instincts, you know, if you can play big league shortstop, you can kind of play anywhere. But, you know, for most guys, moving to center field is a physical load. You know, and I don't know. I'd be curious to see what the training staff, you know, and or the analytics department says about, you know, which is more physically taxing.
You have to sprint some in center field. You don't have to sprint very often.
Yeah, it's more quick twitch. You know, I don't know. I mean, I literally don't know. But would there be some sort of mental unlocking similar to, you know, Alex Gord? I don't know. But I think that has to be at least considered. But the frustrating thing is, like, you're not going to get rid of the guy. You trade him now, like, you're getting nothing back. you know? And if you have this kind of talent, you hold on to them. I'm just saying, like, their broader plans or the broader way that they think about this team probably needs to start changing a little bit, you know, because if he's played, what, 10 games? Team has played 70?
Yeah, you just... You can't make a player like that one of the centerpieces for your plan. You just can't. They have to get to the point where it's like, hey, if Mondesi pans out, great.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, we'll be fine. That's just a cherry on top.
And getting there is a big hole to fill because, you know, that is, God, I mean, I said 140 earlier. If he could play 120 games, just the kind of talent he is. He's an exceptional baseball player. He really is, but it's just, you got
to
play.
But not 120 games at shortstop. You want your shortstop to be a guy that plays every day, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, 162 is out the window. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm not even thinking about that. I'm just setting the bar low here.
But even if you're saying that, that does still mean a position change, doesn't it?
It might, no? Depending on who your other guy is. If Bobby Witt Jr., and I haven't seen him play enough shortstop to have, you know, a credible opinion on this, but the people who have say that Bobby Witt Jr. can play big league shortstop. So if you've got...
So under your scenario there, basically, if Mondesi played 120 games, then Witt could play those games at third, and then whenever Mondesi doesn't play shortstop, Witt could slide
something
over
like
and play
that.
Shortstop?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I think Nicky Lopez can get you by for like a week at short or a few games or whatever. I don't think he's a guy you want there for... 6 weeks. I think we saw that actually early in the season. He's not going to make errors. He did some. For the most part, he's going to be sure-handed and make the right plays and everything, but he's just a little bit limited. There's a reason that growing up, he was moved to second base, right? So, but if they've got another guy on the roster that can play that position and play it at a big league level well, then I think that is a little bit more of a cushion. But, God, it's still there's still a gap in talent of what you envisioned. If you are to the point where, you know, Mondesi is going to play 40 games in a season, you know?
So here's my problem. We're doing all these backflips and everything else to cater to Mondesi because of his injury history. If Bobby Witt Jr. can play shortstop at the major league level, when he gets up here, just make him the effing shortstop and then move Mondesi. And because Bobby Witt's not the one that has a problem staying healthy then.
No, that's...
Put him at... That's shortstop, one of your most important positions. Put him at shortstop, leave him there, forget about shortstop, and then figure out Mondesi with second base or the outfield or whatever else. I don't want to see him jerk around Bobby Witt. Well, here, you're going to play 40 games of short and 20 games of second, 50 games of third. Put Bob... If he can play shortstop, give him shortstop. If nothing else... Like you said, what did you start the segment with? They can't count on Mondesi.
Yeah, they can't trust him.
Right?
So
if you can't trust him, put a guy that you can trust at shortstop.
I get it, and I'm not going to argue against that point with a lot of passion, because I understand where you're coming from. But my point would be moving around positions, that's just something guys do now. Versatility and athleticism is part of the Bobby Witt Jr. package. It's part of what they talked about when they drafted him. You know, ability to play multiple positions. It's just something that guys do now. The other thing, like if Mondesi is a better shortstop than Witt Jr., then you'd want him playing shortstop. Now, again, what I said earlier about the position change to me is not because of Bobby Witt Jr. To me, the position change would be if they think that they have a way to keep him healthy. If what they say, if there's some sort of, and Nick Kenny is really good at his job, and he's got good people working for him. And if Nick has some sort of calculus about the type of injuries that Mondesi is getting, the way that they're happening, and if they figure, look, the load, the specific like kind of stress on a body at second base or center field or right field or third, whatever, is a better fit for him physically, then I think you do that. But I don't think you move him just because of Bobby Witt Jr. I think Bobby Witt Jr. is going to move around a little, but that's part of his appeal. Like, to me, that's a... What do the kids say? That's a not a flaw, it's a feature for Bobby Witt Jr. to be able to move around. If Mondesi is the best shortstop they have in the system defensively. So if he's healthy and, you know, again, with Nick Kenny and that stuff checks out, I would keep him at short. But again, I understand what you're saying. and you just sort of want to plug and play, leave him alone, not stress over this. I get that too. I just think modesty, yeah, I mean, modesty gives you a better chance to make plays in the field.
I pointed out earlier that the Rays are calling up Wander Franco, the top prospect in baseball, and they already said that he's going to play some third base, some second base, and some shortstop. But that's what the Rays do with everyone. They have all these interchangeable parts that move around the infield, and they're very successful. My point is, it seems like a headache. And if you can kill two birds with one stone, solidify shortstop, and you don't have to worry about that with Witt. And if you could move Mondesi to second base or someplace that might give him the chance of staying in the lineup more often, then to me that makes perfect sense to do that instead of
the key part of that to me. I'm
playing with it.
Yeah, I'm sorry I interrupted. The key part to me of what you just said there, Stephen, though, is if it keeps him healthy, and that to me is the whole calculus. If they feel like second, again, any outfield spot, basically anything but first and catcher, right? Will help keep him healthier. Then I can't imagine anyone not being all for that. Yeah,
I mean, you got to try something different. You can't keep doing the same thing over and over again and keep getting the same results.
Yep.
You got to try something.
Yep.
You'll take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And one of the reasons why we were mentioning Bobby Witt Jr., in case you missed us talking about it earlier this morning, he's on fire right now down at Double A. His last five games, he's gone 3-for-5, 2-for-5, 2-for-4, 2-for-4, 2-for-4. That is 11 for his last 22 with six ribbies in his last five games. And over the last 21 days down at AA, his slash line is 343, 405, 672. Over the last 14 days, his slash line is 383, 442, 723. And over the last week, his slash line is 500, 522, 955. That's the much sought after OPS over 1400. So, when would you like to see the Royals promote him to AAA, Sam Ehlinger?
Can I add one more Bobby Witt Jr. stat here?
Please. Please.
I was just looking at this. There's some concern from people who watch him every day about strikeouts. And I was just looking at this. In the first 20 games of the AA season, he struck out 27 times. 27 strikeouts in 20 games. And that's not just a nice round number. I did 20 because his home run bench started in game number 21. And in those 19 games, he struck out 18 times. So as the power has turned on, he's still striking out a little bit more than you'd want for a guy against AA pitching. But it's just interesting to me that he cut it at both ends. You know what I mean? Strikeouts down, home runs up. That's not an easy thing to do. And that to me, when the stuff that they're going to look at, when they think about promotions, that's pretty high on the list is chase rate and all those things. Okay. Now you asked a question. If you look
one,
at
one like, more, one more addition that, yeah. He's got a 6-game hitting streak right now. How many times do you think he struck out during the 6-game hitting streak?
Well, I'm cheating because I'm just looking at it. I have the game locked
Nate,
up.
Nate, yeah. Don't cheat. Nate, then you answer, Nate.
Well, I'm going to guess it's a pretty low number since you're bringing it up. So I'll say 6-game hitting streak, I'll say he struck out twice.
He's struck out 14 times.
Well, that's a lot. Seems impossible. Playing,
no, he struck out 3 times in 6 games. Point is, trending in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is the point. Go ahead, Sam.
So the general history, there's no like, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing, but the Royals, and I don't think the Royals are alone in this, but I think they want to see, if you're making a mockery of your level, I think they kind of want to see you do it for a month. And we're what, like a week away from that?
Yeah.
Something like that. So I would expect, and look, if they made that move at 9:01, right when I'm walking out of the studio into the car.
I'm in.
I would not be surprised or think that that was premature. But, you know, I would expect it sometime in the next 10 days, 2 weeks at the most, assuming he continues like this or close to it. They do want him to stop in AAA. I guess we all know that now, you know, and at least do it there. And I'll tell you this. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they thought he'd have no problem at AAA. Just the and some of this is the pitching in AAA is just not that strong, which is an interesting thing I've heard from a couple of people. Of just when you look at numbers in AAA, you know, chop off 5 or 10% of some of the offensive numbers, just because the pitching there is not very strong. But yeah, I mean, I do think he'll go up. He's doing all the right things, and I also think like one little thing, the struggles he had at the beginning of AA, they went back and forth a lot. I mean, we all remember in, it was like early to mid March when they were, you know, sort of made it public that they were thinking about him for the opening day roster, and that didn't work out. But they were still going back and forth between should we start him at AA or AAA. They did the, I guess you could say, more conservative route, put him at AA. But I think, like, you know, kind of what we've seen shows that they probably did the right thing. You know, if he struggled there in the beginning, and I think that's a good thing to see guys struggle. You know, to see especially these top prospects how they're going to get through some adversity and how they handle that, how they are as a teammate, all those things. I think that matters. And I think he's passed the test, but my hunch is that the Royals will want to see him pass the test for maybe another week, but it could be sooner.
Nate Buchady.
Well, look, I'm excited to see him get up to AA. I'm sorry, get up to AAA. We've seen pitchers at AAA that have done really well that have come up and not done so great. Yeah. Jackson Coar came out of the bullpen this weekend. Is that maybe a better opportunity for him to just get his feet wet at the major league level at this point?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's the more traditional route, right? The Royals and other teams have done that a lot of transitioning guys. Like the guys you transition in as starters are kind of, they're different. You know, those are guys that you're expecting to be starters for 12 years in the big leagues. And I think they still have that hope and expectation for Jackson Coar, but it is a little bit easier transition. You can go a little bit more at max effort, you know, if you know you're only going to have an inning or two. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a look, there was discussions about doing that, you know, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was when they initially brought him up. So, yeah, it's just a little bit easier road. Easier. I mean, you're still trying to get out big league hitters, right?
Yeah, but low leverage games when your team's losing, yeah, and you come in, it is easier.
You can let it fly and, you know, it's
just
a little bit
pressure.
Yeah, and it's a little bit closer in both ways, right, to the experience at AAA. It's still big stadiums, better hitters, all those things. But to your point, low leverage, I don't know, a changeup that is, you know, one baseball off, you know, you might be able to get away with in that situation. Whereas if it's the top of the first and, you know, you're facing the other team's number two hitter and he hits that 450 feet, that's a big difference. So, and it also, again, if you get confidence, I always, for yeah, whatever reason, the Zach Greinke model is in my head, and remember, like, so when he walked away from baseball for however long that was and then came back and he was just dominating, and it was in Wichita, right? Did I don't even know if he ever went to Omaha, but I remember he was in Wichita and just killing people, and they brought him up and it was as a reliever, and they wanted him just to sort of, and look, I know Zach is different than a lot of baseball players, but that was important for them to, for him to see success and be able to throw a little bit harder and all those things. And I think maybe there's some of that with Jackson Coar right now.
Let me tell you, I'm sorry, I'm giggling over here. I'm looking at minor league stats, hitting leaders at AAA, because you mentioned, you know, he should have no problem doing very well against AAA pitching. And so for people that don't know, AAA split up between AAA East and AAA West, and AAA East is 20 teams, AAA West is 10 teams. And so just let's get this out here. So the Omaha is in AAA East along with 19 other teams. Who do you think is leading AAA, all of AAA East in home runs? Someone from Omaha.
Oh, is it McBroom?
Ryan McBroom has 14 homers in 39 games. Who do you think second?
O'Hearn.
No, Emmanuel Rivera, the third baseman for Omaha. He's got 13 homers in 38 games. Who do you think's third? Ryan O'Hearn. He's got 12 home runs in 12 home runs in 19 games.
Right.
First of all, what in the hell is going on at Omaha?
Yeah, there's a lot of altitude.
And Gabriel Gabriel canceled the second baseman. He's sixth with 10 home runs. So they have four guys in the top six in home runs.
Why is Witt not up there last week?
I don't know what's going on right now.
They want him to actually face some pitching, maybe. I don't know.
Right. Because apparently there's nothing to gain here because McGuire, the McGuire Canseco of AAA East, McBroom and O'Hearn, just the production, not the PEDs, just the production, you know.
You know,
but
so
the point is, that's right, exactly what you said. What exactly is he going to pick up there? You need the experience, but we've seen what McBroom and O'Hearn are, and they are mashing at a different level down at AAA East right now.
Just because you brought up the Greinke thing, it's probably always good to remind people. I sometimes take for granted that everybody remembers this stuff, but a lot of our listeners probably don't know or remember this. But during the Allard Baird era, when Zach Greinke was one of several players like this, they did not think that AAA was a necessary step along the path. Carlos Beltran skipped AAA altogether. They were like, this kid's ready. And their attitude at that time in the Allard Baird era was, there's as much big league talent in AA as there is in AAA. It's just, it's not as refined. Mm-hmm. It's usually younger guys with bigger upside. And when Dayton Moore and his crew got here, their attitude was AAA is an important part of the step because what you have in AAA is guys that do know how to do the job a little bit better. Guys that have made, a lot of the guys in AAA have spent some time in the big leagues. There's sometimes what they call those, like those 4A players that have maybe, they don't have the electric stuff as a pitcher that you might see in AA, but they know how to pitch. And there's still something to be learned by going through that step. It'll be interesting, especially with the shakeup and the way the minor leagues are structured now. Does Dayton Moore and do they start to feel like maybe it's not as important to go up to AAA? To this point, they have, I don't remember the big prospect that the Royals skipped AAA with since Dayton Moore's been here.
It doesn't. Yeah, I mean, maybe there's somebody, but I can't think of them right now. And look, there was other stuff going on with Allard. I mean, that team needed anybody, like
right.
anybody with talent
right.
and a pulse was going to get called up. But I think that this is the better way to do it because I think there is something to learn. Like you said, now that's a good way to put it, Nate, of there's a refinement. And when you skip AAA, you don't face that refinement until you face the refinement with the high-end talent.
Yeah.
And that can be a lot. And, you know, look, there's certain guys like Carlos Beltran that are just different. I mean, he's going to be, well, depending on the trash can and all that stuff, Carlos Beltran had a Hall of Fame playing career. You know, I think we'd all agree on that. So I think that there is something to gain, but I'm just the pitching. I'm looking at this. Omaha's slugging 509 as a team. Like,
come on, Omaha.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think Bobby Wood Jr. is going to, I think he's going to do just fine, but they also, there's a weird deal with COVID. Even if you called somebody up from AA to the big leagues, they'd have to stop in AAA to pass some protocols, which is kind of a strange deal, but it
exists. Have them stop there, hit five home runs in the game, and they come up to Kansas City.
Exactly.
We'll be right back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Sam, may I ask you a question about the NBA playoffs?
Sure.
Please. So does this make it more likely for you or less likely to watch the conference finals and the finals, considering we don't have the usual suspects on display, LeBron, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant. You've got, and I'll just run through this real quick, with the Phoenix Suns, they haven't been to the conference finals since 2010, And they haven't been to the NBA Finals since Charles Barkley faced off against Michael Jordan back in 93. And they have never won a title. You have the Clippers, who are making their first appearance ever in the conference finals. You've got Milwaukee, who made the conference finals a couple of years ago in 2019 against the Raptors. But before that, it was 2001, and they haven't been to the NBA Finals, I think, since 1974. And they haven't won one since 1971. And then you got the Hawks, who have only been to two conference finals in the last 50 years. And so they were there, and they got swept in 2015, and before that, they got swept by the Lakers in 1970. So you have new teams that do not have a lengthy history or for some history at all of success in the postseason. New young stars of the NBA that are exciting to watch. Does this make you more likely to watch and more interested, or less likely because the superstars we've grown accustomed to watching in the finals are not going to be there this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's probably the same. If I was, you know, that's not an answer. So if I'm going to answer your question one way or the other,
it's a terrible answer for the radio, Sam. Damn you. Thank you very much.
I would say a little bit more, probably just because it's new. You know, I think sometimes in the NBA, it can feel a little static.
Right.
And, you know,
that's why I like this.
Yeah. And I think probably for some people, and maybe the business of the NBA, that's probably good. You know, to sell LeBron and Kevin Durant and whoever else. But I got to be honest with you, Stephen, I don't really care about the business of the NBA or what their TV number is or anything
right.
like that. I just, I like basketball. You know, for me, I would have rather seen the Jazz than the Clippers. I just like watching the Jazz. I like teams that just shoot a crap ton of three-pointers and run up and down the court and do all that. You know, similar with the Nuggets. I think Jazz Nuggets would have been a hell of a fun series. But yeah, I mean, I'll still watch. I'm particularly interested in that the Eastern Conference series. I think that's a really interesting matchup. Just the basketball nerd in me of you know how the Bucks are going to defend what Trae Young does. Where you know what's interesting to me about Trae Young. I mean, he's obviously like he's different, right? And the way he plays is different. He went. I think it was 5 of 23, something like that from the field, 5 of 22, somewhere around there from the field in that game 7. And Doc Rivers is just talking about how he was still like the difference maker because of all the attention that they had to put on him to you know, to hold him to that. And it let other guys get off. Now, obviously, Philadelphia had some problems of their own. And not all of them were even named Ben Simmons, although many of them were.
Oh, no.
But I just like new. I like fresh. And that's what this is to me. I'm interested. You know, Giannis is just, I don't think there's ever been somebody quite physically like him, you know, with the ball handling. He can't really shoot, but the ball handling and getting up and down the court and you know, the size and the strength. I'm interested. I think the NBA is in a really good place, man. I think it's a fun product to watch. The shot making and the athleticism is exceptional. And there's always these weird, like, sort of soap opera, you know, diva drama, you know, kind of storylines as well. I think it's a great product right now.
I like the fact that there aren't any of the super teams.
Yeah.
I mean, the Clippers are probably the closest thing where you had guys that were from somewhere else all kind of collaborate and get together and say, hey, let's join forces here and play. And I know, Stephen, you give me I don't love the fact that LeBron James did that. I didn't really root for LeBron when he went to Miami.
I think you might love it.
I loved it when LeBron James went back to Cleveland. That's when I started rooting for LeBron James, when he went back to Cleveland, tried to bring a title there.
Am I wrong to say, but like I feel like, I absolved the Clippers from that now that they were down and they didn't have Kawhi.
Yeah.
And everyone on this show said, well, that series is over. The Jazz have advanced.
Right.
And Paul George stepped up and said, you know what? Nobody thinks I could put this team on my shoulders and win this series and eliminate the number one seed. And he did it. So now I have a totally newfound respect for the Clippers and Paul George because of the adversity they overcame. So I shouldn't see anyone picking them after Kawhi Leonard got hurt.
Right.
Totally agree.
Right. And so basically I look at it and I don't see any super teams left. These are teams that were kind of put together and they found their own stars.
Yeah.
And so I think there are four easy teams to root for.
Yeah. The only downer is, you know, I think Brooklyn, if they didn't have injuries, I mean, you never know, right? Like
of
what
course.
You just said, Kawhi, the Clippers still advanced. But, you know, the Brooklyn injuries, maybe that is the thing that kept them. But, it is different with super teams. It just is. Like, you don't have sympathy for them the way that you would if, you know, Giannis got hurt, you know, right before game six or whatever. It's just you digest it differently. But, no, I really like the NBA. I really do. I think the talent level is better than it's been in a while. And, yeah, I'm really interested in it.
Well, hell yes. The Bucks-Nets series alone was worth, I mean, just investing time in watching the postseason. Yep. That series was the payoff that I think we're all looking for. Hey, Sam, good talking to you again. Happy Father's Day to you, and we'll talk to you next week, my man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Look forward to it.
That's Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.